best thing I can tell you right off the bat is always carry something with which to write and always carry something to write upon. Always. I do. Most writers I know do. You never know when something's going to strike your ear. You're going to hear a little piece of conversation or some words that come into your mind, or a memory, or a wish, or a longing, a regret even. You know, it's good to have something to write with and something to write on. I didn't always do that, but what that's meant is that at the farm, my mom has an entire, it's a good thing it closes, but a secretary, you know, writing this, with a lot of little slips of paper. I used to work at a dry cleaner's when I was in high school, and he had a lot of things on the backs of dry cleaning slips and so on. Matchbooks out of people's pockets, you know, just all kinds of stuff. And it's all in there. What a mess, you know. I'd hate for them to have to publish my papers out of that secretary, but they may have to. Excuse me, I'll close this. Okay. Is everybody pretty comfortable with the air temperature and so on? Are you? I guess if you're not, not a lot I can do about it, but I'd like to try. And I think we've got pretty much all the lights on, so that's all to the good. Well, the session is on creative writing, but that's a subset of the larger notion of creativity freeing. Now, I am an artist. I was an art major. I was a theater major. I was in graduate school for creative writing. I've taught painting. I've sold paintings. You know, I even studied ballet for about a month. There were really no facilities for the gentleman to change clothing in, so I felt a little out of it, so I didn't keep going back. But my involvement with the arts, I've photographed, drawn, thrown pots, made sculpture, you know. Most of those things I've also made part of my living at one time or another. Getting through college, teaching guitar lessons, and selling pottery, and so on. So I'm a person, that's just backfill to let you know that I'm a person who believes in arts and is, has, through formal study or self-study, touched as many of them as I can find. I believe that everybody is creative. I think we just are. When it says that God made us in His image, I think that's one of the main things that that's talking about. What does it say? God made in His own image. He made, He created in His own image. God the Creator is certainly one of the persons of God that we talk about in church and that we're recognizing, and it's always easy in a spot like this to recognize the creation and so on. Well, one of the things, one of the attributes that I think God has put in everybody is creativity. I don't think there are uncreative people. There may be people who haven't had a chance, maybe people who haven't been in the right situation in their life, or in terms of geography, or you know, there are just all kinds of life deals that get in the way of some of that. And I believe that a lot of things are creative. I don't just hold to, you know, four or five artistic disciplines of high art and say, well, that's creative, but a really good strawberry rhubarb pie is not creative. You know. So that's one of my beliefs, and I think you should just hear that. I don't use the word talent. I don't use it for myself, I don't use it for anybody else. I do believe sort of an inclination towards something, and then I believe if you are faithful to it, you actually produce creative stuff of some kind. And I believe that everybody not only is creative, but that everybody needs to keep exercising that. That it can kind of atrophy. I'm using an analogy there, which is a poetic thing to do. You know, poets deal with metaphor. Well, in teaching, I use a lot of analogy. In Jesus, life, you saw a lot of parable. They're all pretty much linked. Metaphor, analogy, parable. And so people not only are creative, but they need to be exercising that. And the way I talk about that is I talk about an expressive mode or several expressive modes. Expressing who we are, expressing how the world's coming into us, expressing our interior life, what we think, how we're feeling, all of that stuff. My supposition is that everybody on the planet probably has two or three, maybe more, expressive modes that could be lifelong service to them. You know, you might write, paint, do toll painting. You know, you might play the saxophone, photograph, and do clog dancing. You know? So, and I use that analogy, borrowing it from the athletic education world. They talk about a lifelong sport. Now they do. They didn't when I was a kid. We played dodgeball in gymnasium class. Or they had a little thing called scooter ball, which was a little platform about this big with four piano wheels on it, and you parked your hiney on it and scooted around like a spider on the gym floor while people threw balls at you. Well, that's not a lifelong sport, you know. You don't want to keep doing that when you're 55. But now they're encouraging people to discover what your lifelong sport, you know, is, or sports, you know, and that's something that could serve you your whole life. Well, I say we've got lifelong arts. All of us do. It's just a matter of finding them. We're fortunate because the one that we're working in today, creative writing, has very little baggage. If we were going to have as one of our try-on experiences, large ceramic sculpture that covers the wall and goes across the ceiling, that we'd be in trouble. You know, you got to wrestle with this stuff, and you've got to glaze it, and you've got to fire it, and you've got to get a van to move it, and all that stuff. We just need a little piece of paper and a pencil. You know, that's handy. That's nice. Now, when I ask that you consider carrying a writing utensil and a writing pad of some kind, call that your field notebook. That just is. A lot of my writing I do at a keyboard, but a lot of it gets done in the field notebook when I'm just out somewhere. A lot of writers are bad drivers because they try to write over here while they drive. You know, the ideas are occurring to them as they drive. I even knew a guy whose friend invented a thing that he thought would really sell, and it clamped onto your leg here with a piece of plastic, and it was a little pad so you could write while you were driving. I don't think this is really to be recommended. But do carry a field notebook, and just trust it. Jot in things and presume that nobody's going to read it. Eventually, somebody probably will. I hate to break that to you, but everything we write down, eventually somebody will probably read. Yeah. But try to put that out of your mind, you know, just assume that nobody's going to read it. You're not writing for an audience. You're just writing for the joy and the therapy and the goodness of getting it out. This wasn't what I wanted. I wanted coffee, but it wasn't ready, so I've got spearmint tea, and I'm trying to adjust. It's a matter of review for some and news for others. These are the three stages of writing as I practice them and have practiced them for 30 years. Schools now, they have a lot of different fancy names for these. Pre-edit, or pre-write, write, edit, I guess they call them in some places. That's like, I mean, I don't even understand that language. How can you pre-board a plane? I don't get that. We're having pre-boarding, which to me, like, you were getting on a plane, I call that boarding. Well, anyway, like athletes, again, we warm up. See, nobody told me this when I was a school student. But you got to warm up. We knew athletes do it. We knew the cheerleaders do it. We knew musicians do it. But they didn't tell us that writers do it. I don't think they knew. And then just write, and that means only write. That means no editing, no thinking, are they going to get this? No thinking, is this a nice thing to say? No thinking, oh my gosh, what if somebody should read this? Just write. Okay, it's also called free writing, stream of conscious, sometimes it's called. The editing part comes in down here, and that's in stages as we fix up. To tell you how it goes for me, when I write, usually about 7 words occur to me, or 5 words occur to me, and that starts me off. And there's no explaining really why or what the attraction is there, but they're attracted to me in some way. Boom, I'm going. And if I'm at the typewriter, I type a single space, wall to wall, about 6 pages of stuff. Okay, it's sentences, fragments, poetic phrases. Sometimes it goes down into a poetic shape for a while, you know. And then I walk away from it. Do anything for a while. And then come back and see if there's anything worthy in there. Okay, now I'm a person that overwrites. I write way more than I need, and then I chop things down until I find, you know, what's in there of any value. A lot of us don't want to do that. We want everything we write. You know, we don't want to sort of risk that we might write something bad, dumb, or unattractive, or, you know, that would open us up to criticism or whatever. But the truth is, you know, we can do that. We could just free write. And so that's what we're going to do an example of today. But I almost left out a really important part. At the beginning, or near the beginning of a session, I always like to read a piece of highly composed writing, art writing. And the status on these things in terms of fineness of tuning is poetry up at the top, and then other kinds of prose, you know, creative nonfiction, novels, short stories, and so on, personal essays, etc., below that. On down to where you get to the, you know, journalism is down here somewhere, and then below that is company reports, right? So, but what we're talking about is high art writing. Doesn't mean using fancy words, it just means paying attention really closely to the words and to the arrangements and to the all of that kind of stuff. Let's see. Mississippi, you haven't heard anything from this book, have you?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll try that. She's been very faithful, and I don't want to keep reading the same thing to her, so I always ask. Maybe I would look in there if I got the chance. Okie doke. This is by an American poet, a retired professor. He's probably got 10 books out, I don't know, or more. He just got back the 15th of June from being the very distinguished visiting poet in residence at Stockholm University. He's had similar positions in places all around the world. He's a dear friend of our families, and I hope we are of his. His name is Robert Dana. Maybe I'll do two. This book is called Starting Out for the Difficult World. Already the title intrigues me. There's a little, it's not that he's trying to be obtuse or anything, but there's a mystery that brings me into that. What does he mean by difficult world? Starting out, who? Who's starting out? Etc. Well, this comes before the actual poems. And it's just called Horses, and I would invite you to listen to it just for the music of the poem. Not for what it means, but just the absolute music. This is really a tone poem, as you have symphonic poems. This is called Horses. Horses of earth, horses of water, great horses. Horses of gray cloud, a blizzard of horses, dust and the ponies of dust, horses of muscle and blood, chestnuts, roans, blacks, palominos, wild dapple of Appaloosas, Spanish ponies, cow ponies, bronx, mustangs, Arabians, Morgans, Tennessee Walkers, Trotters, Shetlands, massive matched Percherons, horses and the names of horses: Whirlaway, Man of War, Cold Town, Canonero, Foolish Pleasure. Horses with tails of smoke, the giddy laughter of horses. Horses of war, their necks clothed in thunder, nostrils wide, the ground beneath them terrible to look on. Horses of anger, horses of cruelty, ringing the iron bit in their mouths. The horses of Psyche, Blake's horses, the horses of instruction, horses of breath, dawn horses, and the one horse in the heart that runs and runs. Kind of got us there at the end, didn't he? It has mythological horses, it has racetrack horses, it has work horses, you know. Just the pure beauty of luxuriating in horses, you know. And it's not narrative. It means it doesn't tell a story. It's not about one horse and his life and death, you know. It's not about one proud owner, any of that kind of stuff. It's just a celebration poem. And then, and the one horse in the heart that runs and runs. Is that enough mystery for us? What do you think of that? That one horse in the heart. What kind of kooky thing is that he's going after there? One horse in the heart.
My granddaughter loves horses. She has some toys of that, and they fascinate her. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. And unicorns.
Oh, yeah. Horses and unicorns. Mm-hmm. Decorated horses.
Decorated. Well, I would take the horse of the heart to be referring to the emotions and such that go on within your heart.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where I put it anyway. You know, the strength of a full heart, you know, a heart of courage, a heart of wisdom, a heart of pain and dejection, a heart of just, you know, living our life. He's already alluded to a lot of muscularity and athleticism in horses, and he's named parts, their tails and their nostrils flaring and their feet. And so I have to assume that he's going for, you know, the essence of us.
Virtue,
life itself.
I'd say a longing.
A longing, running and running.
I kind of got a picture, too, of like when a human being can be standing perfectly still, but yet their heart is just moving around everywhere and just furiously pumping, and you're feeling things that are going by as you watch someone walk by that you know, or see some kind of beauty when you're hiking, or, you know, something, and you're standing very still on the outside, but on the inside there's this, and it could be a good turmoil, but just some turmoil that's happening in your heart.
A lot of
and
roiling.
You jump up into your throat and bash down into your stomach, and, you know, it's got this running horse in it.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess we all wanted to keep running. Well, so that's one. I'll read this other one here. And I just think that I relate writing a lot with talk, memorable talk. And there are some writers who don't do that. But the ones that I like and the ones that I feel best about do have a closer, and so I think it's important for us to hear good talk, good, honest, eventful talk, as I think it's good for us to read worthy stuff, stuff worthy of us, worthy of our best minds, worthy of our best feelings, you know. I think those are urgently needed in our writing, for our writing. So I just think it's always good to be around it. You know, it's kind of like when you're having a good conversation with somebody, and then later you realize I've had that happen, you realize, gosh, we're having a high-level conversation here, you know. Sometimes it happens. This is the title poem called Starting Out for the Difficult World. It's just a one-page poem. Now, this is a very different sort of poem. This is not a tone poem. This is not only involved with musicality, although there's a great deal of musicality in it. It is rather narrative, and it's also highly metaphorical, especially in the second stanza. Starting out for the difficult world. This morning, once again, I see young girls with their books and clarinets starting out for the difficult world. The wind has turned into the north. It picks a few leaves from the trees, leaves already curled, some brown. They scatter. Even so, their circles under maple and hackberry thicken. The light, clean as juice to the taste. Great art, someone said, rides on the backs of the poor. Perhaps that's so. But this is not Long Island. No packed white waves leap yelping on the shore. Here, the nights are cold and starry. Three solitary clouds pig along the near horizon. And you could mistake this autumn for Keats's, or your own, or the autumn of someone you once knew. That's kind of an enigmatic feel on the end of it, too. I should mention that perhaps it would be of interest to you to know that Robert Dana was born in Boston. He was early orphaned, joined the Navy when he was about 16, da-da-da-da, came back, went to school to study writing, and taught writing for a good long time. So he's lived in Iowa for probably 40 years now. So this is not Long Island. Yeah. No packed waves leap yelping on the shore. Here in Iowa, the nights are cold and starry. One of my favorite little parts of this is in this sentence. Three solitary clouds pig along the near horizon. I don't think you have to be from Iowa to be able to use pig as a verb, but I like it that he is.
You're saying pig as in P-I-G-E?
Yeah, pig. You know, these clouds just kind of... What an imagination, you know, what a thing. I mean, people see clouds all the time and say, oh, it's a swan, oh, it's a rooster, oh, it's the stoning of St. Stephen, you know. And here's a guy that says their movement is like, you know, just pigs wallowing along, you know. I like it. I don't think anybody's ever said that in English before.
No, I never heard it.
You know? That's inventive stuff. Inventive stuff. That line alone is worth the price of admission. Whatever that book cost. Well, he gave it to me, so I shouldn't say that.
His name was Robert?
Robert Dana, D-A-N-A. Yeah, he was D-A-N-A. He was raised a Catholic. In fact, he has a sister who's a nun, and he his ancestry was both Irish and Italian, go figure. Yeah. Yeah. From the slums of Boston.
I'm moving my chair, sir, just because that fan makes too much breeze down there.
Oh, is it? Okay. I wish I could turn it off down here, but the switch is way up there.
I'll move away from it.
Okay, thanks. Alrighty, so that's just some good language to get us kind of stirred up in there. We know that, scientists know this, I don't know how they know this, but I've read more than once that the speed of human thought is somewhere, it's six digits, it's in the neighborhood of 160,000 or 200,000 or something. It can't be 200,000, that'd be faster than the speed of light. Nothing is faster than that. Like 160,000 miles per second. That's how fast we think. That's how fast the chemical electrical charges go on. And so, in order to warm up, let's use another analogy. How many of us were scouts? Okay, that's enough. In order to have fire, you have to have three things. Oxygen, fuel, heat. Here's what we're going for right now, is some heat upstairs. Let's take some deep breaths up. we'd all be a lot healthier if we remembered to do that several times a day, but I don't remember either. Okay, we're going to try to get up to warp speed here. I have a lot of different exercises that I do before I write. And a lot of them have to do with just favorite words of mine. Others have to do with trying to wake up my senses. And we'll try... we don't have time to... okay, we'll try two, and we'll make them short. How this works is I will say a favorite word of mine. And, well, I don't have to have my favorite word. Maybe somebody else has a favorite word. We're all here because we carry words around in a little different way, and we have some words that we just are, you know, we like. We just like them. I have whole lists of them, you know, and it changes all the time. None of them ever falls off, so I guess I just keep adding to it. So what we do is really like those tests where they just hold up a thing and you're supposed to say the first thing that comes to your mind, or they say pickle and you say green, you know, dog, cat, you know, those kind of word association things. And so that's what we're up to here. And it might be, it probably won't be, it better not be composed. It might be some sentences. It more likely will be sentence fragments or some just little phrases, two or three words in an order. Could be a list. Leaps of association, you know, anything. I'll time you and we'll go for 1 minute. And the idea is to write by the pound. Okay, we're just trying to get as much on the page as possible. And we don't care, we're not judging it, we just want to get a bunch of it on there. Now, I am at an advantage because I'm handicapped. I can choose to see clearly or not clearly. And when I take all my spectacles off, I can't see for beans. So when we're done with this, I'm going to write, just kind of stroll around quickly and see how much is on your page. But I won't be able to read it, so don't worry about that. I may fall over you, but I won't be able to read it. I'll write with you and try to keep track of the time. Does anybody have a favorite word they'd like to offer the group? Word that you've always been kind of partial to? Or
open.
Open, okay. Open.
Good. Bingo, thanks.
So that you might be inclined to do it, I'll read mine. I don't always, but I will. Open, door, shut, heart, closet, close, head, to ideas, to feelings, cellar door ajar, mouth, open-handed, open-ended, open water, over open water, running over open water, wind and water splitting. Began to tag some words together there after I sort of, you can see the warm-up process in me. It was just listing of stuff. And then it began to sort of, you know, once I got to open water or something, I was interested in that. Okay. Anybody want to read theirs?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. If it takes a weird turn, you should go with it anyway.
Yeah, sure. Because there aren't any wrong roads, you know.
I misunderstood. I wrote a poem.
Oh, well, that's a nice misunderstanding to have. Do you want to read it?
Sure. If one feels wide open, no barriers impede, great the confusion and great is the need. The awareness and stillness is not very far, like the honey that drips from an open jar.
Cool.
Isn't that nice?
Thank you, Craig. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I did like she did. I went off on a... I had a U-turn in here. Open, close, slam shut, lock, key, crowbar, hammer, invite in, latch key is out. Come in, welcome, I'm glad you came. Sit down, stay and visit. Have some coffee, how have you been? You look great. It's been so long, I wish you didn't have to leave.
Okay, so we got a dialogue there happening. Okay, so we suddenly got a character and then another character and then an interchange between them. This stuff will take you all kinds of places. And it's rich and it's risky, and sometimes you come up with a memory that you wish you hadn't come up with, and sometimes you come up with something that just flabbergasts you. You know? That's part of the expressive mode, though. Okie doke, let's do a second one, and this one is a sensory one. If you would, we'll only take 30 seconds for this. Jot down everything that you hear in 30 seconds, in as brief a way as you can for each thing. Jot down everything that you hear in 30 seconds. Ready? Go.
Okay.
Fenton. Anybody want to read theirs? Please.
Feet, voices, pencils, paper, light, buzzing, doors, walls, gravel, fans.
Good list. Anybody else? Please.
Pencil, scratch, voices, noise, breath, sniff, ears, calling, quiet, women talk.
It's terrific. Somebody else?
Footsteps upstairs, voices, pencils, writing, creak of building, breath.
Yeah.
Loud noises, screaming pigs, singing people, crying children, soft breezes.
Thank you.
I don't know if you hear soft breezes, maybe, but...
Apparently you did.
Pop in my head.
Paper rustling, go! Scribbles and conversations mingled with the friction of ink on paper.
Yeah. Okay, I have footfalls, voices, pencils, door swinging, which is what I thought it was, but then I heard it again and I wasn't sure that that's what it was. I heard a sniff, I heard a chair creak, and I heard a pad flap.
Oh, you were right, what we actually were hearing now. I'm sorry. I didn't get your...
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I didn't express myself.
I didn't hear screaming pigs right now.
Oh, well.
Back to Iowa, see?
I could go for it. The other night, we were in here working late, and we stepped outside, and my wife thought that she was hearing just kids in the village squealing at one another.
Yeah.
And it was eagles.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, they do like they do eagles and owls and, you know, all those raptors. They were gathering up and down the river and just having sort of a jamboree, you know, calling to one another.
Oh.
And they just kind of got nuttier and goonier as they went, you know. Mm-hmm. Just for the joy of singing. Eagle songs, that's great. Okay, so that's just a warm-up. You can do that with your eyes. There is not a time when you can't write. My friend Bill Stafford, William Stafford, very often, if he gets up early, or got up early, he just died a couple of years ago, but I mean 4 or 5 o'clock, and starts writing. And he does it every single day. And he produced an immense amount of poetry, much of it very, very good. And I said, well, Bill, what happens if you just wake up and there's just nothing in your head? You know, you just got up, you just put the coffee on, you haven't had a cup yet. What do you do? He said, I look out the window. And you just say, well, it's gray, and there goes the paper boy down on the street on his bike. You know, a blue car just went by. Since it's been raining, the tires are fizzling on the still wet streets. You know, it was just, you know. Is that going to be a poem? You didn't know. Is that going to be worthy of something? No, you know. But it's a way to start. That's always important in an expressive mode. You know, when you're faced with that white canvas, that first brush stroke to get on there is the tough one. Once you've got something on there, just a dab of green, you've created a problem, you have some tension, you now have to keep composing, because it's not a painting, is it? You know, it's just a big white canvas with a dab of green on it. And something in you says, well, put some more green over here. That kind of looks like a little bit of a meadow. Put some blue above that, you know, and so you just keep going, just keep going. But what stops us? There's so many things that stop our creativity and that make us not free to create. We stop ourselves a lot. We think we don't have it in us. We think that now's the right time. We think that we do not live in Paris. You know, which if we think that, we probably don't live in Paris. But we think we need to, you know, in order to write. Or if I lived in an exotic place. Or if I had a month off, you know. I live in a dumb little town. Oh, my family's nothing much to write about. Wrong, 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 wrong. The stuff of our daily lives is the stuff that we ought to be writing about. The very thoughts we have, the very feelings that we have, the interchanges that we have, and it can be anything. Suppose you're driving up to the post office, and it's got one of those boxes that has a little snoot that comes out on it, and you're putting the letter in, and it falls in the snow. That's happened to me a lot, you know. That could be the beginning of a piece of writing. Is that worthy of a piece of writing? Very well might be. That writing might begin to take me into what the contents of the envelope are. Is the envelope salvageable? Do I have to go home and start all over and address a new envelope? Do I have to write a whole new letter? Are there other snows that reminds me of? you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's a white envelope on white snow. What's that got to do with anything? I don't know, but I'm sitting in a white car, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The sky's white. Suddenly everything seems, you know, white and pure, et cetera, you know. So anything leads to all everything, you know, and that's all to the good. Now, a sample of the right part, we'll use one that we've used before as, just as a sample. I'm just going to have to draw a little diagram. This is lung man. And there's his brain. There is lungs. I put them on there because we need oxygen, so keep breathing. That's great. Your brain, by the way, is a furiously grabby organ of the body. It's got to have a lot of oxygen to think well. So stand on your head or something. Well, you know, when we're born, we have some little, a few little crinkles in there. Those are called convolutions. And each one of them represents something that we learned while we were yet in the womb. And as we come out into the world and then learn more, we get more, more and more. So that by now my brain looks like a piece of really chewed on chewing gum, you know. We used to have a phrase that said that we knew this. We used to have the phrase, that's a new wrinkle. Remember that phrase?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a new wrinkle. And now, try saying that, you know, around a standard-issue teenager. What are you talking about? Nothing's wrinkled. But that's what that meant, was we get a new wrinkle every time we learn something, every room we walk into, everything we hear, and so on. We have language that shows that we're trying to deny that. We have language like this. I forgot. Well, that's biologically impossible. What? One of your wrinkles just went and got smooth again? Wrong. That doesn't happen. It's in there. Maybe I just can't lay hands on it right now. So I use phrases like, it slipped my mind. No, it's still in there. It just slipped. If I want to be tough on myself, I say, I neglected to remember. But I don't say I forgot. What I'm getting to is memory is a wonderful blessing, even bad memories. And it's one of the things that calls forth from us an expressive mode. It's one of the reasons we need to express, and it's one of the real gifts for expression that we have. So this is one of the places where, as we get older, we have more memories. And we've got more stuff to write about instead of less. That's great. So on this one, we'll just take a minute and a half. And this one might actually have some sentences. And we'll just begin with a phrase here, but I want us to have time to do a second one here in a minute. We'll begin with the phrase, I remember. Just write that down. And then close your eyes for just a second. Please. And have yourself a memory. Could be of when you got married. Could be something very much less consequential. Buying a jawbreaker when you were 9. If nothing like that's coming to mind, remember this morning. I chose the green sweater. I remember I chose the green sweater this morning. Okay, so have yourself a memory and then finish that as a sentence. I remember, ba-da-ba. And then after that, if you want to say another thing about that, do that. But if you don't, just write, I remember again, and remember something else. And if you want to write some more about that, do that. But if you don't want to, just have another memory. Please stop. Okay, anybody got something they wouldn't mind reading? We're all in the same boat. We know we just now did this, so nothing's going to be perfect. Got something?
I remember looking for an outfit hanging in the closet, and something creaked in the wooden part of the closet, and I became instantly wider awake. because I was afraid the noise might be from a moving mouse moving towards my bare feet on the cold wooden floor.
Bingo. A lot of images in there. There are sounds. There are the cold floor. There's tactile stuff. Coldness is a sense of feeling stuff. So on. Do you have one?
I remember my early school days. We lived in the country, so it was necessary to ride a horse-drawn school bus about 3 miles to town. In very bad weather, the dirt road would have mud holes so bad the horses found it difficult to pull it through. We had to get out and walk to make the bus lighter.
Thank you. Not everybody has that memory.
No, that's right.
Dandy memory to have. Somebody else? Please.
I remember the boy on the corner hiding behind the pole. Young and boyish, afraid of my father. How did he know he was approaching? The old green Chevy with that painted red grill drove up the hill. Father turned right into our road. Jump in, he said. As I looked back, he came out from behind the pole. Did you see him, Dad?
I don't have that memory, but you do. Good stuff. Please.
I remember the cooked cereal was thick and stuck on the sides of the pan this morning. And as I was scooping a ladleful into my bowl, a childhood memory was triggered. Mom always cooked mush for breakfast. More often than not, some scorched and stuck to the pan. If we complained, she would respond in a mock curmudgeon tone. Eat it anyway. It will make you smart or curl your hair. Take your choice.
Fire that one into Reader's Digest. They pay good money. That's worth about $400 or $600.
Really?
No, I'm not kidding. They pay well. And they're always, actually, I've met their senior editor, and she says they're always on the look for stuff like that. Someone else have one? Please.
I remember the day Dad brought the herd of purebred Holstein cows from Wisconsin. Depression days, bank closed. Big black and white cows, we gave them all names, and took cans of sweet cream to the creamery to be made into butter. Cows with udders tight and taut, milk that foamed in the pails.
Hey, that's great. Some of my best memories are farm memories, you know. Like this one, my granddad had one cow, that was enough. And when I was there in the summers, in the wintertime he milked her in the barn, but in the summer she grazed down by the creek. And I'm thinking about two or three cows, but they all had about the same name, Daisy, Bossy, Betsy, you know. So they'd be down there grazing and they would get this tail full of cockleburrs and then dew. And so when you went down there, you got your milk stool and you tied her to a tree, and you're going along, and whop, with this big, heavy, sharp, pointy, cockleburr, wet tail. And about the time you were cursing her for that, she'd put a manure-encrusted foot in the pail. So that was a morning you should have hobbled her, but you thought you could trust her, but you couldn't. I'll just go through what I did here. It begins with one, and then it, for some reason, just leaps over to a completely different one. I remember that first bike. Now, that has nothing to do with what follows. I remember the time I fell catching crawfish in Crane Creek and sliced open my knee on the solid limestone creek floor. Stitches. They said that word I'd never wanted to hear. That brilliant red word, stitches. I was 10. Granddad and Dad carried me up the hill to the farmhouse. Actually, I got into a little bit of a fix up here because I think I was actually 11, but I decided that I liked the sound of the word 10 in there and that it wouldn't hurt anything. So I kind of fictionalized that part. So this is not reporting.
Doing some editing.
Yeah, I accidentally got to doing some editing there. You know. But it didn't slow me down much. Okay, so that's one way to start. And we can start with that phrase every day. You know, we can start with that phrase many times a day. We're still in pretty good shape here. Did anybody do anything with the one the other day called I Am the One Who? Did you? Would you mind sharing that with us? Or?
I am the one who was born on an Iowa farm a mile from a town my great-grandfather helped establish in Cherokee County, Iowa. I moved from that 1,000 acres my grandfather homesteaded after the crash of 1929. My father, who was to inherit that farm, was required to find one to rent. He did, and we moved 8 miles away. I was ready to begin school. I had to ride a school bus. We lived 7 miles away, but I had to ride several more on roads that turned into mud after rains and snows. How glad I was when we finally reached the gravel, the one that led to the school, a building. The twists and turns the driver made on the, and the blue smoke coming up from inside the homemade cab of the bus made me sick to my stomach. Often on mornings, even vomiting before I reached the school door. I went to that school all 12 years. It was a good school where I learned the basics very well. My life on the farm was one of many pleasant memories. Kittens at the barn, feeding the horses, cows, carrying cobs, gathering eggs, driving the workhorses, riding our saddle horse, walking down the hill to the mailbox and leaving mother's order to Sears Roebuck or Montgomery Ward. My father worked very hard. At harvest, he liked to drive the horses at unloading time and round as the ear corn went into the crib from the elevator. June was haying time and I drove the team as my father stacked hay in the rack. Thrashing was the best time, waiting to see that steam engine coming up over the hill. I rode in the grain wagon, never minding the dust and the grain hulls blowing in the hot breeze. I came into dinner as dirty as the men who handled the bundles. As I grew older, I was the one who worked for a neighbor lady. I cooked the meals for a family of four, and I was paid $3 a week. My mother delivered me to the home on Monday morning, and I was confronted with all of the Sunday dishes, along with the cooking, and I was to clean her whole house while she sewed dresses for a wedding. I worked and saved $35. I decided I was going to college and become a teacher. It was either teaching or secretarial work for women in the early 1940s. I knew I didn't want to be a housekeeper. I landed a job in a small town, a Scandinavian community. I still live there, having married and found myself back on the farm and a housekeeper, but this time it was my home. Three children later and 30 years as a teacher, I am now the one who finds myself a grandmother of 8 children, memories of a 46-year marriage and a husband I lost 9 months ago. I'm the one who is wondering, where do I go from here? I'm glad the Lord has allowed me to know each of my grandchildren, and soon they will all enter their teens. I hope for new vigor and interest in life.
Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah.
That's already in the form of a personal essay. It is expressive mode. Boy, is it expressive. I'm just going to ask this flat out. Did you discover some things while you were writing that? I have the feeling that you did.
Yeah, I suppose I did.
Yeah.
I
mean, did you
I had
have
a good life?
Yeah, did you have some memories that you haven't thought of in a while?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what are the moments that stick with you real smartly in that piece?
Cleaning the lady's house for $3 a week.
Yeah.
Cleaning the lady's house?
I did that.
Not minding the dust in the holes, and you'd come in for dinner really dirty and dusty, just like the guys who were working.
Yeah, great.
Oh, just the bus fumes and everything, really. Yeah. I can almost smell them.
Now, that leads us into something we won't have a whole lot of time to talk about, but that leads us kind of right up next to the fix-up part. She's already been doing some work on this, and what we do in the fix-up part is we get to make decisions about things. And it led me right back in a circle to yours. I'm sorry, dear, I don't remember your name.
Arlene.
Could you read through yours again for us? Would you mind?
I remember my early school days. We lived in the country, so it was necessary to ride a horse-drawn school bus about 3 miles to school. In very muddy weather, the dirt road would have mud holes so bad the horses found it difficult to pull the bus through. We had to get out and walk to make the bus lighter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, that's a really fine beginning of something, and it was under duress here. You know, I was making her write fast and so on and so on. During the fix-up stage, we get to decide, to remember a particular little part there even more closely, and then say it. And that's the detailing that makes the piece come alive. Because that's what our memories are really made of, is loads and loads, bazillions, I guess, of details. And so, the sound of the harness slapping on the...
I could have put a lot more description.
Yeah, that's right, if we had time. And so, but now that you're going to have time,
yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff can happen. The sound of the harness slapping, you know. How high did the mud come up on your shoes or your boots? You know,
sure.
Did your lunch pail stay hot or was it ever hot? You know, my folks carried their lunch in a little lard pail. And so the deal was to wrap it in dish towels and so on and, you know, try to get it contained.
My mother heated bricks and wrapped them in rags.
There you are.
Put our feet on.
And I went to a one-room schoolhouse when I was in the first grade. Yeah, I went to a one-room schoolhouse when I was in the first grade, and nothing would stay hot, but we had these radiators, and we could take our food out. The teacher, we had grades 1 through 8, and she would let us put our food out on these radiators so you'd smell lunch, you know, kind of bacon sandwiches and cheese sandwiches and so on. So that's how we kept ours hot. But it's those details and remembering, and then once we think we've kind of got it, remembering closer, you know, and then once we think we've got that, remembering closer. That is expressive mode. That is being creative. Part of creativity is making decisions, making aesthetic decisions, making decisions for the sake of beauty, really. If the horse-drawn school bus, if that was provided by the county, I'm just going to make up stuff here. If that was provided by the county and things, were as sloppily kept as some of the counties I've lived in Kansas and Missouri and so on, maybe the tack on the horse, the harnessing and so on, didn't really get hung in a tack room. Maybe it got hung out. It's kind of green. It's even got some moss on it. The buckles are supposed to be brass and they're, any of that stuff, you know.
Yeah, the more descriptive words and
exactly.
stuff that you can get into, the better.
Exactly.
That
and that kind of...
You want to just write something quick. And
yeah, that's it.
And
yeah,
stop
to... And so that's what we did. We did the just right part, and you did that just right, R-I-G-H-T, and now the fix-up part, we can have the, the good time of just going into that and ventilating it and getting air in it and so on. Now, what I hope that this would affect, we're past time here, but I would hope that you would carry a field book. I would hope that this would affect your expressive mode and your feelings that you can and ought to express yourself. I would hope that this would affect your talking. If you write enough, you talk in very much more interesting ways than you used to. I would hope that this would affect your letter writing. Okay. I would hope that this might lead you to, on a pretty regular basis, keep a journal. I would hope that this would cause you to seek out very good writing and read it, okay, and talk about it with people. Why? It's good for you.
My children gave me a book recently that I am to do for my grandmother, for my granddaughter's keepsake, that I am to write all these memories in. And I've got to get after myself to get it done.
Yeah, well,
I haven't done it.
Well, do it on scratch paper and then on the fix-up stage.
You know, things like this or something she hardly visualizes.
Oh, yeah, I know. The world has changed so much. Well, God bless your hearts. Thanks for coming. And
thank you.
We'll be seeing you. Keep writing.
Thank you.